Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, is off, but joining me from the Gentleman Ultra is Mr. Matt Santangelo. Matt, how are you tonight?
Doing pretty well, Joe. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, fantastic to have you. And I'm really excited because I get to sit here and just talk Serie A. We're going to do a Serie A only show. We're going to chit-chat about a few things. Some things that are new. We're at the halfway point of the season in most of the leagues, so I think this is a great time for it. And I want to start out with what happened this week in the Inter Milan-Napoli matchup, where Kalidou Koulibaly was the victim of some racial slurs, some chants that ultimately saw him lose his cool, pick up a yellow card and a foul, and then a second yellow for applauding the ref. He was thrown out of the match. He was red carded, received a 2-match ban for his actions. And Inter Milan received a 3-match ban in the Curva Nord for the fan chanting. But this is a problem in Italy. We saw recently Juventus have their Curva closed, and they filled it with children. We've seen racial slurs not only in Italy but with Chelsea, recently as well. So I want to talk about the racism problem in Italy and what really can be done, whether it be by the referees, by the FIGC, and then globally, if we look to FIFA and say, how can we fix this racial problem in world football?
Yeah, so, it's not like, I just want to make it clear, for anyone who just looked at that incident yesterday with Koulibaly as the, okay, well, now is the time to speak. Now is the time to have the conversation on, combating or eradicating racism in football. I think the conversation was long overdue. It should have been happening years and years ago because this is a reoccurring theme. And again, unfortunately, the league that me and you cover, Joe, it's Serie A that's been getting the rap as a lot of a racism heavy league, and it's a shame because we know that it's only a select group of idiots. That's me probably keeping it PG, and I can probably go a little bit deeper and to vent my frustration that we're talking about such a thing in 2018. But it's unfortunate that the actions of a few have to ruin it for many people who go to these games, Inter fans, Napoli fans, Juventus fans, as you mentioned, even Lazio, Atalanta, Juventus, and now Inter fans have all been sanctioned or in some degree punished for racism, chants, racial abuse towards Koulibaly over the past couple years. The conversation, if we're not going to have it now, when, Joe? The punishments, it's got to be severe enough. If you make example out of a club like Inter, or a big club like Inter, or any club for that matter, that'll at least hope to get the ball rolling, hope to set the tone and set a precedent that says, we're not going to tolerate this, and if it happens again, you're going to feel the wrath of this, because we know how passionate these people are. We understand that people have passion, this is not just banter, because I think it's quite clear, banter, conversation, arguments back and forth happen. They happen even inside when you're watching a game at a bar, but Milan Inter fans at a bar. I've been to several bars in New York City, and we have these conversations. It's friendly. It doesn't never get personal. It never goes down the road of being racist or personal attacks. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the frustrating part for me is you can be a fan, but you don't have to go that far. And what I saw yesterday, I'm happy that a lot of the players are coming in defense and really in support of Koulibaly, as it should be. It shouldn't just be Juve, Lazio, Atalanta, Milan, Roma, none of their fans were ever punished. That's not a good argument for why Inter shouldn't get punished severely. Because if you said, again, like I said, if you give a club like Inter a beating in terms of a punishment, then maybe it opens up the eyes because, again, these people love this sport dearly. If you take away something that they love dearly and take it out of their control and they can't have it for a couple weekends or a couple games, people do this religiously. You see it in this country in certain sports and in other countries as well. Mm-hmm. Take something that someone loves so much and punish them by taking it away. Now, all of a sudden, you see how they react. Now all you say, hey, you know what? Maybe I was out of line. Maybe I should learn it and kind of reflect on this. But if you the way you handle it, and that's the way the federation has handled it, the referees handle it. If you handle it so minimally and you kind of gloss right over it, and you don't take it with it being a serious problem that it is, mm-hmm. then nothing's going to change, Joe. Nothing's going to change. Mm-hmm. And if me, and I'm not trying to stroke my own ego because that's not who I am. You know me. Anyone who's listening to this once it goes live knows me. It's not me saying, well, I have 6,000 followers. You know, let me just stroke my ego for a bit and use that. No, I think if I have that following, I have people who are journalists in Italy. I have people who are journalists in other countries who are around this and see what I'm seeing and maybe feel what I'm feeling about this and have maybe somewhat the same opinion that I do. If I'm not going to be using my audience, the people who follow me, and use that as a platform to at least start a conversation, at least hope to start a conversation, because we all know the power of Twitter. We all know the impact it can have in things like this, on social issues and in things involving racism, then I feel like I'm doing a disservice to many people. And that's what I'm trying to do as well when I put a couple of tweets out yesterday, because I feel, you know, I've talked about this, or no, I've thought about this for a while. Maybe I haven't talked about it enough, or maybe I haven't voiced it on Twitter. Just because I haven't tweeted about it doesn't mean it's not something I think of. Doesn't mean it's not something other people think of. But I think yesterday was kind of that tipping point moment, because it was a big game. You looked at this. You clearly saw how Koulibaly was being treated by the fans. The officials did nothing. And not only did they do nothing, they also sent him away from it, because I think he kind of reached the tipping point where he's been receiving it constantly in the past couple years. The referees continued to do nothing about it, and he gets sent off. We saw it with Sully Montari at Pescara. He was pointing to his skin, saying, these people are talking about the color of my skin, and you're doing nothing. He was given a yellow card, and then he walked off the field. Same thing with Boateng several years ago with Milan in a friendly. He walked off the pitch. Kevin Constant had bananas thrown at him. And even you talked about in the Chelsea game with Raheem Sterling. It's unacceptable. Mm-hmm. The conversation, if we're not going to start them now, if we're not going to make real change to this now, then when?
Yeah, I agree. My thing is that some of these punishments, especially the punishment we saw to Inter, the 3-match ban at the Curva, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, is light. It for me, it's a slap on the wrist, and it's a slap on the wrist in general, but it's a broad stroke to people that are, you know, we always talk about a few rotten apples spoiling the bunch, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this is kind of what we've got here. We've got a set of let's even call it 100 people, right? Let's say that was that many people to be heard, where Koulibaly was antagonized through the entire match. Shouldn't there be maybe we're going about this wrong? Maybe instead of punishing the Curva as a general broad stroke, maybe we need to take this and have somebody that's like a credible witness and say, hey, listen, you know, John over there, he's the guy that threw the banana. Okay, take John who threw the banana and ban them for life. I mean, we've seen this happen. We saw it happen, I believe it was last year after the Europa League match for Chelsea, mm-hmm. when they were on the subway in France. And on video, you had the people that were chanting those anti-Semitic chants, yeah. and they singled them out. They identified them and banned them for life. And I think maybe that's where we need to go. It's one thing, you know, Inter needs to police their fans and that sort of thing. I get it. And slapping them on the wrist, I think is warranted. And I say Inter, but I mean any team that allows their fans to do that. Okay. So mm-hmm. Inter is just the immediate example. But I think if you can in place or install a system that allows a fan, a credible fan, okay, because I guess, you know, Matt, you and I could be sitting at the match together. I don't like you. I run over to the security guard and said, hey, he just used a racial slur at Koulibaly, and he's the guy, and you need to throw him out for life. You know, if I don't like you, I can do that. So we need a credible source. But a credible source that would allow for the identification of these bad apples, that then the club could say, listen, you're identified. This was it. We saw you. We have multiple witnesses. You're gone. I don't care if you've bought season tickets. I don't care if your grandmother bought season tickets and they passed them down to you. You're gone. We can't have that kind of behavior in Italy, in Spain, in England, in France. We can't have it anywhere, because it's just not right in these days.
In society in general, this is not even a sporting issue. I think the fact that, again, you touched on it, and a great point that you made was, you know, again, a few rotten apples are spoiling the bunch. And, you know, I went to the Milan Inter, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever, around there. And there are people who are rivaling fan bases who can get along. We see it in this country. I've been to games where it's rival. I've been to Red Sox Yankees games, baseball. Mm-hmm. I've been to Vikings Packers games. I've experienced these things where the rivalry is intense, but I've never experienced it. Maybe again, I can't put myself in the shoes of, you know, a guy like Koulibaly. We don't have the same color skin, so I can't say, well, you're it's different, you know. And in many ways, it is. Unfortunately, I can't experience what he experiences because maybe I don't get it. Maybe I don't understand, or I'll never experience that. And that's the sad part, that we actually have to, you know, look at that and treat people differently based off the color of their skin here in 2018. But I just think it's sad because, again, you know, there are people that go to these stadiums and they just go to have fun. They go, it's away, you know, away from the work grind. It's away from stress, struggles of daily life. You know, they go into the game with a couple friends, and that's their way out. There's Inter fans, again, the vast majority that did nothing. All they did was punch their ticket and show up and want to watch their beloved team play. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that though they have to be punished for doing nothing, and now they're taking the brunt of the punishment for the people who are inflicting and doing all the racial abusing. And I think that's the frustrating part. Getting back to what you said about ways to govern this, way to regulate it, way to at least try and see if there's ways we can kind of police it. It's very difficult. And I think, you know, that's the unfortunate part. Do you have people in the crowd? Do you have people in certain sections like security officials who are looking at that maybe to think, but then you're also putting those people at harm too, because if they say something and they're the ones that have to make the decision to throw someone out, are they going to be, you know, injured or harmed, or you know how fans can get. So mm-hmm. I think it's a very delicate situation, very difficult situation to deal with. But I will say this, and I think we can all agree here, that the people who are in charge of this, the officials, the FIGC, you know, the governing bodies of Italian football, they're not doing enough, and that's what's the frustrating part. I think that's what's the issue is. I think if you ask most people who are football fans, do they believe that racism can be completely eliminated from the sport? Probably not. Unfortunately, I think it's too tough. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're having people who have the authority, they have the power, like the official yesterday, to call the game, as Ancelotti said, that they went to him several times, they didn't do anything about it, and they're still not doing anything. That's the problem, because they have the authority and they have the power to make that call and to say, you guys are going to keep this going. We're stopping the game. We're not continuing this game unless you guys put an end to this. That's what pisses me off as a fan, because I know this is not a team thing. This is not a territorial thing. I'm a Milan fan, but for me to see Inter fans, to see Napoli fans, Juventus fans, who are genuinely good people, who are just love their team and that's all they're doing there is going to support, have to be lumped in with this group, because I see it. You see too. We interact. Inter fans. No, it's the select group of Inter fans. It's not Inter fans in general. These sweeping allegations, the sweeping accusations, that's what kind of angers me too, because there are a lot of people who just want to show up and watch the game they love so much, but we're seeing the ugly side of the beautiful game, unfortunately.
Right, I agree. And I also agree with you on the fact that the officials should have done more. In this instance, once the whistle blows to start the match, the official is the ultimate authority in the stadium, really. The match goes and stops by the referee's whistle. And we've seen it hundreds of times for hundreds of different reasons. If an official feels that the match cannot be played properly at a certain point in time, they will blow their whistle and pull the players off the pitch. And I think the official in this match, and I don't have his name handy, had, I think to an extent, a moral responsibility. To if he was witness to these racial slurs and these chants and knew that they were happening and heard them himself, and you've got coaches saying, hey, this is happening, I think you have a moral responsibility to say, mm-hmm. hey, we need to stop, okay? We need to stop. We need to get off the pitch, and the security needs to handle this. Otherwise, we're done. And I think that was an opportunity missed by the officials in this particular match, and here we are again now talking about it.
No, 100% yeah. too. And then, of course, you know, you had the comments by the FIGC, the head, and you're pretty much saying that we must have faith in the institutions, and we're going to look at it. It's archaic. Their way, and we all know it. The Italian game, it's not at the same speed. It's not at the same with the same times as maybe other leagues. But that's no excuse. If you're gonna make lazy comments and lazy, you know, statements such as, well, you know, we're gonna look at it, you know, we're gonna make sure that this doesn't happen. It's not action. It's just them putting a patch over something so it goes away until the next thing happens, and then they say the same thing.
Right.
That's my issue too, and that's what pisses me off, and that's what angers me and frustrates me, because now as an Italian soccer fan and as a fan of just the game in general, people look at this and they say, man, this is how this game, these are how these leagues deal with racism, and it looks ugly for the sport. It looks very ugly for Serie A.
I agree. Let's talk about some happier things. Obviously, we are pretty much at the halfway point. We're 18 matches played. 19th match will be played on the weekend. We see Juve on top with 50 points. They've only dropped 4 points in the entire season, and two of them came on the weekend matchup with them against Atalanta on the road. Clearly having one of the best seasons in football, period. Right now, the 4 points dropped is equal only by PSG. Every other team in every league has dropped more points than that so far in the season. So I want to look forward. Obviously, Juve with a big challenge against Atleti in the Champions League coming up in February. When does Juve start to feel comfortable with the Serie A and kind of mission accomplished there, and can really focus on the Champions League? Are we at that point yet, or do we still need to see a little bit more?
I think we need to see a little bit more, and the game against Atalanta was a perfect example of that, right? You know, you got a guy like Ronaldo who, you know, has been playing pretty much every game this season, and of course, the one game that you rest him, Atalanta goes ahead, and you go down a man, and you have to kind of bring him back in to get a draw. So I think that was kind of one of those cases where, again, maybe Juventus fans, and I think there's many Juventus fans who are probably going to say, you know, the league's wrapped up, and maybe it's just banter or trolling to, you know, Napoli fans or Inter fans. But whatever the case is, if you ask a lot of Juventus fans, I think there are some that saying, well, hey, hold the brakes, pump the brakes here, because it wasn't so long ago that Juventus were in a big hole behind Napoli, behind teams like Roma, and they had a storm back in the second half with a great effort. I think they were maybe down 11 points in the hole. I think there's maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, if I'm correct.
Yep.
You can you know, fact check me on that one. But I think, again, that was one of those wake-up calls where you're saying, okay, not so fast here. Maybe, you know, you don't want to count the chickens before they hatch. So for me, if I'm looking at this, that game against Atalanta was a bit of a surprise. You know, I'm not trying to discredit Atalanta, their quality, the coach, because Gasperini is a fantastic manager. We all seen what he's capable of doing with that team. But for Atalanta to kind of be the team to do it, like you'd expect maybe like a Roma on the weekend or Napoli or a Milan or an Inter, someone like that to do it. But a team like Atalanta kind of putting them in their place, not putting them in their place, but humbling them a bit and saying, don't count on that trophy just yet. And, you know, obviously we saw Napoli couldn't take advantage of it, which again still helps Juve because they go +9 in the at the top of the table. Mm-hmm. But I think that was one of those instances where they're like, okay, well, maybe we have to make sure that we don't, you know, we have to be a little bit more careful, more calculated with the way we kind of rotate guys in and rest guys, because it's going to have a bigger impact once we get to that round of 16 match with Atleti, as you mentioned, where you want to prioritize that, because we all know the Champions League's the trophy that's escaped Juve over the years, but you also want to ensure that you are maintaining your objectives in the league. So I think, again, Allegri's done a great job with that. He's always maintained that his Juventus teams, or the season rather, is always split into two, and we all know how strong Juve come out once it took the calendar year turn. So I expect much of the same for Juve, but definitely a tough test with Atleti. Diego Simeone is a fantastic manager. Obviously, they have plenty of talent. We all know what they're capable of doing. They've made deep runs in the past, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to be no different this year. I think they're really going to push Juve to the limit, and that's one of the biggest tie that I'm excited about.
No doubt about it, especially with the offense that Juve can provide now, especially with Cristiano Ronaldo and the defensive prowess that Cholo Simeone always seems to have with his Atleti side. I think it's going to be a great matchup. And it's also a great matchup for Cristiano Ronaldo. This is one of his favorite teams to score against, going back to his Real Madrid days. So I think it's really a tasty matchup and one of the best ones we're going to see. I want to backtrack a little bit, Matt, and I want to go back to Atalanta here real quick, because you touched on them a little bit. I want to talk about Gasperini as a coach, and I want to talk about Atalanta as a team. They're only 6 points out of a Champions League spot right now, only 6 points behind of Lazio. They're 3 points out of the European spots, last spot held by AC Milan. At home, they've beaten Inter Milan, they've beaten Lazio, they drew Juve on the weekend, and on the road, they've drawn Roma and AC Milan. They are 2-3-2 against the top seven so far in this season. Is Atalanta the best team in Italy that no one talks about?
Probably. And I think that you can make, I mean, and I don't think this is really the, you know, you went through all the games, went through all the results they picked up against big teams. And obviously, as impressive as they are, I don't think this is really just kind of been the 1 year where they've done that. We've seen in previous years, even 2 years ago, which was the last year where Serie A had three Champions League spots. They finished fourth. They finished fourth that year. And I think people tend to forget that. Obviously, last year they kind of dipped a little bit because they lost quite a few players: Andrea Conti, Mattia Caldara, Frank Kessié. You know, they really didn't get the same production up front. You know, with Papu Gomez, and, you know, Andrea Patania didn't do too well that year. But in any case, you know, we're seeing this year that they are a team that can replenish. They know how to scout. They know how to game plan, specifically Gasperini, for some of these bigger clubs. They don't crumble in the face of fear of you know, going at a team like a Juve, because you can. It's easy for you to see Juve's team and their team sheet and think, well, we got to play defensive. We don't want to get battered. We don't want to give up too many goals. We don't want to be countered to death. But we saw with the game yesterday, or a couple days ago rather, with Atalanta and Juve, is that they can. They'll maintain their mentality. They'll maintain their approach, and that's credit to Gasperini for instilling that in his guys, that they know that they can compete with some of these teams, and they know no matter who's on the team, no matter the rivaling, the differences in quality. For me, when I look at a team like Atalanta, I just think it's impressive how they can continually replenish and really, you know, stay in the thick of things despite wholesale changes every summer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know, again, like as I mentioned, Kessié, Conti, Caldara, those are three main pieces of their team, three young pieces of their team. It's never easy to lose a really, really good defender, a great box-to-box midfielder, and a right back like Conti in one offseason and still kind of be in the thick of things. Mm-hmm. It's a testament to the actual culture of Atalanta. Obviously, the coaching of Gasperini, he's done a sensational job at that team, and I think he's a manager who, if he stays long-term at Atalanta, I think he has the opportunity to do so. But it wouldn't surprise me if some other clubs who in Italy that do need a manager who can do a lot with maybe a little in a limited budget do look to Gasperini as a manager who can do that for them. But yeah, credit to Atalanta. They've been picking up some fantastic results this year. And a big shout-out to Duván Zapata. That was a major, major upgrade over Petagna. I think he has something along the lines of 8 goals, 5 assists. I think they hit a slam dunk there, and it looks as though they have that complementing player up front with Papu Gomez, who, you know, you have that speed, you have the speed, the trickery of Papu Gomez, and you have the technical ability, the size, that big presence, that big number 9, and Duván Zapata. They complement each other so well. Josip Iličić is another one. They have so much talent up and down their roster, and I think, again, you look at the system, you look at their coaching academy, which is one of the best in Europe, probably one of the top few in Italy. This is something that can be maintained. They don't spend a ton of money, but they scout well. Again, they train well. They do a lot of the things behind the scenes that ultimately make them a force on the pitch, and we're starting to see it in the last couple of years.
You know, I want to stick with Gasperini for a second because I want to talk about managers a little bit. I know that we've pretty much identified three managers that are truly on the hot seat right now, in Gennaro Gattuso at Milan, Eusebio Di Francesco at Roma, and Pippo Inzaghi at Lazio. Of those three managers, I can't imagine Gasperini staying at Atalanta much longer. You know, obviously he's proven that he's one heck of a coach. Is he possibly the next guy that you would see in one of these hot seat spots, or do you think he'll go somewhere else, or do you even think he'll stay at Atalanta, you know, long term?
Well, it's interesting because I think if you look at the results, you look at his track record recently, Rick Gasperini, again, as I mentioned, not having a large budget, you know, being able to consistently deal with, you know, squad turnover year to year, still maintaining good results, still being in the thick of things. And we saw what they did in the Europa League last year after, you know, not being in a European competition for, I think it was maybe 30 years. They won their group over Everton and Lyon. I think it was Lyon, if I'm correct. You can check me on that too. But
so.
They beat some quality teams in the Europa League as well. I think they bowed out to Borussia Dortmund in the knockout stages. But you're seeing that maybe Gasperini, his ceiling is higher than Atalanta. And again, no disrespect to them, but I think, you know, it's only natural for a manager who, you know, maybe he's not going to win a title with Atalanta or win a Europa League title or maybe a domestic cup, to want to say, hey, you know what, if I have a team like Milan, a team like Roma, some of these teams that are constantly looking for managers year in and year out, maybe it's something I want to explore. It's only natural for a competitor to want bigger and brighter platforms and bigger and brighter challenges. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Gasperini on the radar of some of the clubs like Milan, like Roma, as you just mentioned. But it also wouldn't surprise me to see Gasperini fully commit to Atalanta, because again, a lot of these managers, they like the consistency, they like the familiar environment that they're in, and the control that they have with their manager, with their club. I mean, it could go either way. For me, I think he's a manager that could wind up staying there for another handful of years. But it wouldn't surprise me either way. I think he's deserved to have that say, whether or not he wants to stay on long-term at Atalanta. I think he's done a sensational job, but I also think he's within his right to say, you know what, maybe it's time for me to take the bigger and brighter challenge and see how far I can push myself and see if I can maybe compete for something more.
Right. Now the managers that I did mention on the hot seat, and I want to close before I close, I'm going to close with the Milan teams, but I want to talk about the manager that we see right now. And I also want to throw Luciano Spalletti in there. Between Gattuso, Di Francesco, Inzaghi, and even Spalletti, who has done a good job so far, but for some reason, every once in a while loses the plot. And even this weekend against Napoli, really needed that Koulibaly red card to kind of turn things around and get the goal that they needed by Lautaro Martinez to win the match. I would imagine Spalletti's job right now is safe, and I want to come back to him in a second, but the other three we definitely know are on thin ice. Which of those three is, in your opinion, gone first, and how soon do you think it'll happen?
So you're saying Di Francesco, Simone Inzaghi, and Gattuso, correct?
Yes.
I think the one that's on the thinnest ice and the one that's going to be probably pushed out a little bit the soonest is probably Gattuso, unfortunately, as a Milan fan, because I do love him as a player. Even as a coach, I do love him. I think, you can see that he does have quality as a manager, but he is still a young manager and he does still have things to learn. Obviously, coaching Milan, a club that you play for, we saw with Inzaghi, we saw with Seedorf. It's a never easy thing because, we see how the fans get when the results as a manager don't follow. Some people turn on the manager and it kind of lets people cloud their judgment of him as a footballing professional. For me, I've never been one of those guys. I know Gattuso was a great player for us. And as a manager, he's had his struggles overall. I think he's done a pretty decent job, all things considered. But again, if you look at the results that Milan have had this year, recently four straight games without a goal, the first time since 1984 they've done that. All signs point to him being the first one out, especially with all the chatter about replacement Arsene Wenger, Antonio Conte, who are both free and available and pretty much ready to look for a new job. Mm-hmm. But then there's also Leonardo Jardim from Monaco. So Milan do have options, and I think you can look to that as saying, well, if Milan have options, then maybe they can at least. But if you don't have options, then you say, well, maybe we're not going to want to pay another manager and have him on the books. So if you're looking at this, and I think you're asking me who the first to go is, I'd probably say Gattuso, but we've heard chatter about Di Francesco. I think the issue there is he's in the Champions League still, round of 16. I don't think changing manager in between a competition like that, where Roma also made a deep run last year, because if you look at Roma's situation, I think it's fascinating. They lost, obviously, in the semifinals last year, right? No one expected them to reach that point. But there was also discussion about Di Francesco. There was also amongst Roma fans I've interacted with on Twitter quite a bit, where he went to that spell last year where they were like, oh, this guy doesn't have it. He don't know what's going on. He don't have what it takes. He makes the same old mistakes. And then he turned the season around. They finished third, and then they make a deep run in the Champions League. So I don't know. I feel like Di Francesco could be one of those managers where he kind of just hangs on by a thread. He lingers, and then maybe at the end of the season, James Palota, they look and they say, maybe we're going to go elsewhere. But if I had to put it in the order, I would think it's Gattuso, Di Francesco, and Simone Inzaghi. The reason why I say Simone Inzaghi last is because this is his first coaching job, his main coaching job. And if you recall, he only really got the job once Marcelo Bielsa didn't get it, or he left pretty much a couple days after being hired. Mm-hmm. And he's done a pretty good job with that team. I think given his background with Lazio, you're going through the lower ranks as a manager in the Primavera, and now having a pretty decent, having some decent success with Lazio senior team here, I think the rope will be a little bit longer there, because I don't see a team like Lazio who else would you hire, over a guy like Inzaghi, who has shown success, albeit maybe a little bit sporadic at times. He is still young. He is a manager that you maybe don't want to give up right away, because he knows what it takes to, be successful for the club, and obviously he has potential as a manager and a young one at that. So that would be kind of my you know, order of, you know, most likely to get sacked to least likely to get sacked.
Yeah. I agree with you, especially in that order as well. Let's go look closer at Milan. Cause I know they're one, they're important to you, but two, they're kind of an enigma. They're, you know, you look at them, they've bowed out of the Europa League, kind of, you know, on their ears, you know, losing to Olympiacos, but they're fourth place right now in the Serie A. That, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet. They haven't scored any goals. But you saw kind of a resurgence of Donnarumma on the weekend. So there's like, it ebbs and flows. Milan is all over the place, it seems to me. Talk about Antonio Conte, which was funny. I was on Talk Sport a couple weeks ago, and I had mentioned that Conte might be a guy that would be next up at Milan, and the hosts were kind of shocked at it a little bit, but it makes sense to me, more so than Arsene Wenger. And you brought up Leonardo Jardim, who I hadn't thought about, but is great with young talent, and somebody that I think, if we do see DeFrancesco leave at Roma, I think Jardim would be a huge, a huge guy to get, especially given what he's done with young players over the past few years at Monaco. I think he was kind of the victim of circumstances in Monaco, and I think he would do well at Roma. But for Milan, I think a guy like Conte would be huge. But for, you know, what do they do at this point? What do they do next? I mean, they're fourth. They're not dying on the vine here. It is disappointing with how they ran in Europa this year. Clearly, they want to change Gattuso and bring in a manager that will take them to the next level. And Gattuso's been great for them because he's offered that stability that they didn't have prior to when they got rid of Allegri in 2014. So they've really gained some stability in Gattuso that they didn't have previously, but obviously he's kind of run his route here, and they need to go to the next manager. So what do they do next at this point? Do they go out and find another striker? Do they go out and find a new manager? What do they need next? Especially a team, Matt, that has been just suffering with injuries. I think they had 9 of their starting 11 out on injury, at one point in time here over the past couple of months. It's just been crazy. So what's next for Milan?
Well, I think there's so many things that, you know, to take into account to break down for Milan, and really ultimately what they need to be restored, if you will. I think that's the word that everyone's been using, restoring, you know, waking a fall, a once giant of Italian football and of European football. Starting off with Jardim, as I know you touched on him, and you also, you know, talked about him being a possibly good fit for Roma. It's interesting because, you know, Monaco's former scout, Geoffrey Moncada, actually joined as Milan's scout, chief scout, mm-hmm. recently. So there's that kind of connection there that you can say, well, hey, maybe there's something there, right? That's something to consider. And I think that's possibly something that maybe could be fueling that speculation. But I think it's kind of still loose right now. I think the reactions I'm seeing amongst Milan fans, very mixed, a 4-4-2 type of manager, more counterattacking, you know, pacey wingers, pacey fullbacks, two holding midfielders. It looks like it could be a possible fit. Again, you have the connection with Bakayoko. From Jardim, where that's where Bakayoko pretty much earned his big Chelsea move, where he did obviously flop. Mm-hmm. So there's a connection there. You can see why there's a link. But if you're looking, you know, at manager, I think that's obviously the missing ingredient, the biggest piece right here for Milan. But for as a Milan fan, I've been telling people this on Twitter, and I think it's only logical, it's only realistic, in that I just don't see an Arsene Wenger or Antonio Conte coming in mid-season. I think they're the types of managers, given the fact that they left Arsenal, Arsene Wenger left, let go from Arsenal after so many years at the club. He's going to want a clean slate. He's not going to want to step in midway through a season, be expected to achieve results, have all that pressure with the injuries they have, and to say, hey, get the job done right now. We're paying you a ton of money. New league, having to learn the culture. I'm not saying he's not a, you know, cultured guy and doesn't know, because obviously Arsene Wenger is well respected. He's established himself as one of the, you know, the best managers of football in the last couple decades. But there is still that onboarding phase. There is that adapting from league to league. And I just don't see a guy like him wanting to make that transition mid-season. If this is in the summer, then talk to me, because I think that's definitely possible. I think he wants to coach at a big club again, obviously. But Antonio Conte, it does make a lot of sense. But again, his wages are going to be high. Is Conte going to want to come in midway through his season and be expected to achieve the results that he's got to achieve? My guess is probably not. He's probably going to want a clean slate, just like Carlo Ancelotti did, where Milan reportedly looked to him when they sacked Montella as the hiring, as the recruitment, to recruit Ancelotti once he was sacked from Bayern Munich midway through the season. He took the entire season off, and then he got hired by Napoli. I just don't think that these big managers want to put themselves in a position where they got to have that immediate pressure. all the frenzy, the no time at all during the season to adapt, you know, to have their the personnel that they have to kind of tinker with and saying, well, I don't like this guy, I don't like this guy, now I got to choose who I want to play. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of moving parts for a manager to make midway through the season, which is why we really don't see it that often. And I just don't see it happening, a big manager, high-profile manager joining Milan at that moment. But as you said, you know, do they need a striker? We talked a lot about the, you know, it's been in discussions now for a while about a possible Morata-Higuain swap. I wouldn't make it. Maurizio Sarri's been adamant, and he's been kind of doubling down that Morata is a very fragile player mentally. Mm-hmm. And I think throwing him in a situation where he's going to be asked to lead Milan's front line under these circumstances, knowing the fact that he was a pretty decent player for Juventus, and Milan's desperation to find that long-term striker solution, I just don't think that's a right fit for Milan at the moment. I think they need someone else, someone who's able to anchor a front line. I think Higuain could still be that, although again, the service is not coming in the way we want it to be coming in. But I think again, you got to look at the match against Frosinone, where he missed a couple chances. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just a lot of things going wrong with Milan at the moment right now. But I do think there's still time for Milan to salvage something. I do still think there's time for Milan to finish fourth this season. But there's that they got to get started now, because you're seeing the writing on the walls. You're seeing where they're trending. For weeks and weeks and weeks, we've been saying, despite all the injuries, despite some of these shaky results, they're still in fourth. That excuse is done. It's over. The party's over. I think they're in sixth right now. You're starting to see that they're not able to score goals consistently. They're not able to beat the teams they should be beating, the lighter portion of the schedule, which is up in these past couple weeks. They do have Spal coming up, which, as a Milan fan, I hope they can take care of. But again, now is the time where they got to pick it up. We saw what happened last year. Perfect example. They got rid of Montella. They brought in Gattuso, who was in a deep hole with no expectations. I didn't have many expectations. Mm-hmm. And he did a fantastic job. I think they maybe finished seventh or eighth off fourth place last year. But there's that fine line and that point of the season where you got to say, well, are we in or are we out? Are we going to make the change now or are we not make the change? And I think now is that time. Again, second half of the season, that's where you really got to start picking up. And this is where you really start to learn who are the pretenders and who are the contenders. And Milan want to be a contender. And, you know, again, that's something, a decision that Leonardo, Maldini, Gazidis, Elliott, they all have to make at this point.
No doubt about it. Let's look across the other locker room at the San Siro at Inter Milan. Currently sitting third in the league right now. They've had a little bit of a rough ride with Raja Nainggolan, who was recently suspended, but now apparently has been brought back onto the team. They were unceremoniously bounced out of the Champions League with a home loss to PSV, which brought them level with Spurs, and then going out on goal differential. This is a team that had their future in their hands, and they didn't seize it. And we talk about Napoli as well, where the two teams where Inter only needed to win the match at home to advance. Napoli only needed to score a goal at Liverpool and would have all but secured their way through to the round of 16. So some disappointment there in the Champions League. But I want to look at this from an Inter standpoint. Has Nainggolan been a success or a failure? And how bad do they want Nicolò Zaniolo back from Roma in the deal?
I think he has been a failure. I think it's, again, when you buy a player of his caliber, of his ilk, guy who you know who is capable of, on his day, when he's committed, when he's, in for it, can be the best player on the pitch. We've seen that countless times at Roma over the years. But there's a reason why Roberto Martinez, left him off the World Cup roster. We know his behavior. We know that he is a guy that, maybe he loves football and maybe he does prioritize it over everything, but he doesn't prioritize it as much as others do, how much they really prepare themselves, in terms of, we see what type of athlete, what type of preparation a guy like Ronaldo has, right? And he's, probably a couple years older than Raja Nainggolan, but he looks like he can go for another decade. Whereas Raja Nainggolan looks like he's on the decline and looks like he's, going to be done in a couple years at a big club. So that's what I think the biggest problem is here. And I think, again, Inter and Roma, when they were looking at this move, Inter were probably thinking, man, we're getting a top midfielder guy when he's committed, when he's ready to go. He's joining a Champions League team as well, so it's not like he's losing that from going from Roma to Inter. They expected a lot more out of him. And again, there's still time. I mean, we've seen it with players where they maybe start off their seasons a little, their first couple months or first part of the season with a new club is turbulent. It's not maybe you know, as good as they expected, but then they kind of recover and they do well. And the only thing Roger Nainggolan can hope to do at this point is to produce when he's called upon, whether that be in a limited role off the bench, starting, whatever the case may be. If you produce, people will forget the other things. And that's exactly the perfect example. And, you know, aside from the off-field stuff with John Mario, he was an afterthought. He criticized, you know, I don't want to go back to Inter and all that stuff. He's getting the opportunity under Spalletti, and he's doing pretty well. And I think, again, there's always that part of a player where if you say, you know what, I don't want to be remembered for that being that type of guy, like a Cassano type where, you know, I'm a problem to deal with. Yes, I'm talented, but I'm more of a problem than I want to probably have to go through and deal with on a regular basis. Roger Nainggolan can kind of go down that same path. But I think what makes it worse is, as you just mentioned, was when you see one of the key pieces that Roma got in that deal for Roger Nainggolan, Nicolò Zaniolo, do so well, scored those quality goals, getting the Champions League appearances and kind of maintaining himself as a starter for Di Francesco. It kind of rubs a little more salt in the wound because you had a young prospect like that who's thriving and flourishing elsewhere, and that could have been a guy contributing to your, you know, quest for a top four finish. And I think that's what's kind of making it hard for Inter fans to stomach at this point. But if Roger Nainggolan can turn it around and he can put in some big results and some big performances the second half of the season, help Inter secure their objectives, then I think they'll take that. But I think, again, right now in the short term, they're looking at Zaniolo and saying, man, we really let a guy who could have been a pillar for us go because he's getting that look for the national team now. And, you know, obviously you're finding that those good quality midfielders like him who are young and who can kind of be there with the club for years to come, it's very difficult to come by.
No doubt about it. Last team we didn't really touch on too much was Napoli. They're currently sitting second place. I believe it is 9 points back of Juventus here. They're a little off their pace from last season, just slightly. Looking to finish right now with about 87, 88 points, which was just slightly off of their amazing second place finish last year. Obviously, the loss of Jorginho really doesn't help, and Maurizio Sarri leaving didn't help either, as it was a system that kind of suited the team. But you bring in a guy like Carlo Ancelotti, a proven winner, has won every trophy there is. Is Napoli at this point, are they a little bit of a disappointment given the way they were bounced out of the Champions League? Or is this kind of where you'd expect them to be? And what kind of moves do you think they should make, maybe even in this winter window, that might get them the Europa League title, which they have to be one of the favorites for?
Well, I think this is kind of more or less where I expected them to be. I think when we did the season, Serie A season preview with me, you, and Roberto months and months ago, I think this is where we had him, right? Juventus are just a notch above everybody, especially with the addition of Ronaldo. But having Ancelotti, we expected them to do a little bit more in the Champions League, and they were right there. I think, yeah, you know, the way they bowed out doesn't really kind of reflect the performance they had in the Champions League, which is unfortunate. That's the way the competition works. Someone's got it. Not everyone can make it. Obviously, PSG and Liverpool moved out on in that group. But yeah, I think, you know, with Napoli, losing Jorginho didn't help. But at the same time, Ancelotti's giving a ton of players an opportunity. Fabio Ruiz looks like an excellent player at 30 million euros, the release clause they activated from Real Betis. He's 22 years old. So at the same time, if you're a Napoli fan, you got to look and say, this manager's come in, he's giving everybody an opportunity. He's not falling under the same or falling victim to the same mistakes that Sarri did with regards to rotation, to the point where his team was burnt out. Yes, they maybe would love to be in first place right now. Yes, they would probably like to be a little bit closer. But at the same time, I think if you're a Napoli fan, you got to like the job that Carlo Ancelotti's been, you know, the job he's done so far. He's letting a lot of these younger players get that pitch time, which is so valuable. Adam Unas, perfect example, who's a talented Algerian player who really didn't get the looks that he probably would have hoped for under Sarri. I think there's only one or two players that Ancelotti hasn't used this season, and maybe even zero players that he hasn't used, which is a testament, again, to his ability to rotate, but also his ability to get his guys ready to say, hey, I'm going to use you. You're going to have your role on this team. Be prepared. And a lot of those guys that have come in have done a pretty serviceable job. Even Ospina, who's had to deputize when he was sidelined for pretty much the bulk of the first half of the season up until recently when he's got his first job back, but everyone's having their role. Everyone understands their role. I think Napoli are in a good spot right now. They want to win a title. I get that. But I think at some point, you know, if they're able to finish second, kind of keep it close with Juventus and maybe make a deep run or maybe even win the Europa League, I think you got to really look at and say, you know what, Ancelotti's coming in a year where he had a great finish last year. It's tough to replicate that and tough to meet that. He's been able to give us, you know, kind of continue along with this project. And I think that's really all you could ask for at the moment. With regards to a January, you know, their mercato and all that stuff, I don't see anything major. I think, again, getting Gulam back was huge. Obviously, he's a big upgrade over Mario Rui. So I think, again, the fact that Ancelotti's been able to revitalize Maksimovic after that big move from Torino a couple years ago, that's also been a big help for him as well. The midfield stacked. The attack looks very strong as it has the recent years. Milik looks like he's elevating his game. He's not letting that miss against Liverpool get to him. So, and of course, you got Alex Meret back, who seems to be a big piece to Napoli's long-term search for a goalkeeper. And I think, again, if you look at the grand scheme of things, the big picture, Napoli are in a good spot right now. Again, if they would have liked to, they would like to be closer for a title, but the season's not over. If they maintain this form, if they're able to kind of just still stay in the thick of things, keep it close at Juve, you never know. Stranger things have happened, and I think overall Napoli fans will probably be pleased with the season they've had so far.
No doubt. Hey, before I let you go, I'd like you to plug the podcast.
Yeah, so State of Play Pod, it's a project that we got off the ground in July. We've only done 10 episodes, but we kind of space them out where we only cover the main storylines across Europe's top five leagues, plus Major League Soccer, which is something that I like a little bit better than just covering the hectic transfer news that people kind of tweet out. By the time we're able to cover it and get a podcast edited, it's kind of come and gone. So what we like to do on the podcast, me and my partner, Petra Barisha, who's done a fantastic job but behind the scenes editing, doing all the scheduling of some of the guests we've had on, which have been sensational. Janusz Michalik from ESPN, who we covered Piontek with him, which was a pleasure, a real joy. We had Alex Kohlberg. Obviously, he does his videos, Chelsea videos on Twitter. He's a co-host, producer for David Moyle's podcast, the Couch Island podcast. So we got some great guests coming down the line. But yeah, pretty much the premise or the concept of the podcast is to cover the main storylines, you know, that people would like to know more about. We want to kind of dig deeper into, unpack more on a bi-weekly basis. We're actually recording our 11th episode coming up shortly on the weekend before the new year. But you got some great things coming down the pipeline. So if you guys aren't following, make sure you guys are doing so. The State of Play Pod, we appreciate the support. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're pretty much available for any type of football fan who wants a podcast. So, yeah, that's pretty much the podcast in short. We do cover, you know, that kind of the niche players as well with a player profile at the end. So if you're looking for a diverse podcast that's not just catered to Serie A or Major League Soccer, that you're going to kind of get your fixings of everything going on in European football and Major League Soccer, definitely check us out, and we appreciate the support.
Oh, man, it's fantastic work that you guys are doing there as well. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight and help me break down the Serie A at the midway point here of the 2018-2019 season. So for Mr. Matt Santangelo, I am your host, Joe Uccello, for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. Thanks for listening, and good night.